This is All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, director of Lincoln City Libraries. Today, I'm happy to welcome back as my guest, Richard Graham. Richard is an associate professor of libraries here at UNL and the liaison to the art and art history, film, theater, and communication departments. He manages their DVD, board game, and graphic novel collections. He also writes graphic novel reviews for the website No Flying, No Tights, and is the managing editor for SANE, Sequential Art Narratives in Education, an online academic journal that's dedicated to using comics in the classroom. Richard joined me last year to discuss graphic novels, and I've invited him back to highlight some recently published items. Richard, welcome back to All About Books.
Great to be back. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. For people who aren't so familiar with graphic novels, just describe them generally. How would you describe them to someone who hasn't heard of them before?
Well, it is a contentious term among the scholars and readers, but generally graphic novel is a useful term to describe book length or sort of serious matter comic books.
So these are books that have a clear written storyline, but very much of that story is carried through the pictures in the book.
Absolutely. And certainly there are experimental graphic novels or that push the boundaries of the genre, but it's a way for publishers and booksellers and even librarians to sort of lump together the kind of materials that aren't necessarily superheroes or aren't geared for children.
I think that sometimes that's a surprise that adult readers have when they see a graphic novel intended for adults is you open it up and it looks like a book that we would think, oh, that's for kids.
Yeah, we always associate images or pictures for those who may be less literate, and certainly children fall under that category. But I think we've shown or we've learned by now that these graphic novels can be quite complex, and the images that they depict can be rife with symbolism and can be quite moving. So they can be beyond just a children's book.
What I've observed when I read a graphic novel is I realize how much I have become a word-centric person, and I'll find myself reading a graphic novel and not looking at the pictures enough, and I realize, oh, I'm clearly missing important parts of the story by not giving the pictures their due.
Certainly, graphic novels require an appreciation for the art and the word.
I believe you brought along a couple of recent graphic novels that you'd like to tell us about. What's at the top of the pile?
You bet. Well, I brought a lot of small print or self-published comics. I look forward to receiving packages or these sort of comics or graphic novels in the mail that I either subscribe to through services such as Patreon, where I can give $5 or $10 a month to an artist author like John Porcellino. He puts out this wonderful black and white minimalist comic called King Cat. I would say it's probably the closest thing to poetry in comics format that you can get. These are very intimate meditations on events in life, events that he's encountered in nature, specifically groundhogs. And I find it a very peaceful and a beautiful comic, and I look forward to getting them in the mail through my subscription.
I wasn't familiar so much with that aspect. So these, to describe them on the radio, are smaller and paperback. And as you mentioned, Richard, these are things that likely you would subscribe to. And am I correct in expecting that there would be some bookstores that sometimes carry this sort of thing as well?
Yes. Some do. Some comic shops do carry them as a monthly serial or as a semi-regular subscription. But also what happens, such as in the case of John Porcellino's King Cat and Sophie Goldstein's House of Women that I have here, is that big-time publishers will note the success of the self-publishing run.
Right.
And then will anthologize it or sort of collect it in one big trade paperback. And it'll reach a wider range of readers that way, and it'll get into the larger box stores, and it'll be easier for libraries, for example, to collect and present to their readers.
And that's part of what you're doing at UNL Libraries is developing their collection of graphic novels.
That's right. And in some cases, I'm not allowed or it's just not feasible for me to subscribe to many of these small press items. But I do keep my eye out because these are important voices. Many of these depict, like, say, for Josh Bayer's anthology here, The Black Hood, it deals with anxiety and depression. And this is an anthology comic where you're exposed to many small-time artists that would not necessarily see a wider or larger audience. So it's important, I think, for me to keep my eye out and make sure that all voices and all readers are represented and all topics get covered in the collection.
So as people become familiar with the overall genre of graphic novels, then it becomes clear that within that genre is a wide range of writers and topics that will be addressed in that format.
Oh, absolutely. For example, this is Codex. This is made by a librarian at Northwestern University Libraries. And this is what you would say almost absurdist or abstract comics. There's no discernible language or lettering. The images are very difficult to make out. And yet, somehow, our mind is able to make sense of it all. It's sort of an interesting trick on the brain in how we seek out narrative and how we make stories up in our own, and we want to make sense or understanding. And there's quite a few homages to regular comics as well. For example, this cover is very representative of the very first Superman with the oval and the character in the middle and the text that's in sort of three dimension that's swooping out towards you. So there's all sorts of hidden references and rewards and treasures if you look hard enough in some of these.
And part of that is the visual literacy aspect of a graphic novel, that you look at it a certain way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, I'm also intrigued by the book that you brought along called My Favorite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris. Tell us about My Favorite Thing is Monsters.
Well, I'm very excited to have this book here as well. And it's a book that a lot of people are talking about, and it's one that I maybe hope to focus on a lesser author or whatnot, but reading this book or graphic novel was so striking that I find myself having to talk about it too. And that's because I think one of the many allures of comics is that it makes for an interesting physical artifact, that we as book readers, we certainly load up our Kindle before we go to the beach, but the physicality of the book and hurling it into our backpack and taking it with us to the beach or throwing it in our car. And this graphic novel is done in the sort of blue line notebook paper. So it's sort of like carrying someone else's private journal around. And it's a very interesting journal. When you open it up, the drawings that it contains within are very captivating. And there's such a dichotomy of style, a diversity of intricate portraits intricate hashing and line work, to these sort of marker or pen and ink abstract or sort of brutal drawings. It's a very captivating story, and it reads like a diary of a young girl growing up in 1960s Chicago who views herself as a sort of underbited werewolf. She has an infatuation with horror movies and horror comics that inform and populate her reality. And when her upstairs neighbor is discovered murdered, she takes on a sort of Harriet the Spy or Encyclopedia Brown detective persona.
I see.
And she seeks out this sort of mystery of not only who murdered her upstairs neighbor, but also the mystery of life around her as she's growing into adulthood and she's in a turbulent time of 1960s Chicago. She's exposed to riots, racism, sexuality and emerging sexuality. As she discovers more about her upstairs neighbor, she was, it turns out, a Holocaust survivor. And so we get into a bit of Holocaust memoir. Mm-hmm. All of these are from the point of view of a child, but this is certainly not a child's book. It is certainly for adults. It is something that very much causes a lot of meditation on a variety of the complexities of adulthood. And the metaphor of monsters, of course, is very striking, I think, in that you're often left, who are the monsters? What is real? What is not? Emil's character in here has a great relationship with her older brother, Dees, who takes her to the Chicago Art Institute. And he exposes her to lots of famous pieces of art. He makes connections to the real world in terms of humanity's needs, as well as things like comic book covers. And, of course, that's an education for us, too, as a reader. Myself, I was so eager to read this book because My youth was shaped by growing up in Nebraska City, Nebraska. And so my impression of a large city of, like Chicago were shaped by things like Kolchak, the Night Stalker, a television show, of course, that precedes The X-Files, filled Chicago with a bustling honking of horns and pollution, but also a place of mystery and a place of monsters. Emil Ferris certainly brings a new light to that sort of idea of Chicago and the people it houses and the monsters that reside within it.
And that book, again, is called My Favorite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris, F-E-R-R-I-S. Richard, for people who are intrigued by this graphic novel medium, where do they go to find them?
There are a lot of places nowadays that one can find graphic novels, certainly at local bookstores and your local comic book shop. But many of these smaller print items, you'll have to look online or go to small expos, cities like Chicago or Kansas City or Denver, websites such as spitandahalf.com or Kilgore Books and Comics have these sort of materials. And, of course, your local library will have these comics as well. They are very responsive to shifts in reading demographics and readers' interests, and libraries do a great job of housing a wide variety of comics and graphic novels.
Well, you know, I love any shout-out to the library. And it is the case that libraries do collect these, and also they tend to have services where if they themselves don't own a particular title, they're able to seek it from another library to use as well. Well, Richard, thank you so much for being my guest on All About Books today.
Thank you again for letting me have a chance to talk about comics and graphic novels.
You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online when you visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.